Hello, fellow true crime lovers. Welcome back to another episode of Dimes of Crime. I'm your host, Richa.
And this is Haley.
Well, all the disclaimers apply. I just want to get that out before Haley and I start talking about fun things on the case. So if you don't have us on headphones, please be mindful of other people. We talk about gross, gory things sometimes because this is true crime. So just be mindful. That's it. Okay. What are you drinking, Haley?
Water.
Me too.
Yeah, I have had a headache from drinking too much alcohol, and I'm going on vacation in like 2 weeks, so I need to not drink for a little while.
You need to go be sober before you go on a drinking binge at the vacation.
Yes, exactly.
We'll reveal where Haley's going once she's already back, like we always do, but I'm very excited for Haley and Connor and crew to go on vacation because they deserve it. They haven't been on one in forever. So
I know, I'm ready.
I'm very excited for Haley to have family around and for her to have like ready set babysitters around so her and Connor are gonna have some fun times. I'm genuinely very excited for you guys.
I'm excited too.
And guys, this is the I can't talk about it. Can't talk. We'll have to talk about it later. I was gonna say this is the first time Haley is going somewhere. And I was going to talk about something, but no, we're going to have to talk about that later. Haley's going to have to cut this part out. All right. Okay. So today's story is actually happening in Bethesda, Maryland. Do we just get into it or am I forgetting something?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Let's just get into it.
So today's story happens in Bethesda, Maryland, like I already said. It starts at 9:30 a.m. on March 12th, 2011, when a 911 call from an affluent part of Bethesda, Maryland came in. Okay, so I had to mention affluent because I know nothing about Bethesda, Maryland. And so I had to Google in Haley's true small town, I don't know, format where she goes into like what the cities are. I genuinely was curious about why every source I read about this case described Bethesda as like an affluent, like really rich neighborhood. And I was like, well, I want to know if that's really true or if this is just one of those things where they're, you know, when you describe a victim, every victim, when they walk into a room, they light up the room. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying like it's a generic statement. I genuinely wanted to find out if this was true about Bethesda. So I Googled. And so Bethesda is actually a very wealthy and well-educated area, or at least was back in 2010. Most of the sources I read on this case described it as a rich, affluent place. So I did a wiki search and turns out they were all right. According to the 2000 census, Bethesda was the best educated city in the United States of America with a population of 50,000 or more. 79% of residents 25 or older had bachelor's degrees and 49% had graduated or had professional degrees. According to 2007 estimate, the median income for a household back in 2007, guys, was $117,000. And the median income for a family was $168,000. To give you an idea, 2007 was legitimately like 15 years ago. So there were families 15 years ago in Bethesda, Maryland, that were making close to $170,000 a year. That's crazy. Many commuted to Washington, D.C. for work. The average price of a four-bedroom, two-bath home in Bethesda in 2010 was $806,000. Guys, that's more than California, just to give you an idea. That's insane. Close to $1 million.
That's about what Hawaii is right now.
Yeah.
1.1 million is the average.
I can't even imagine what houses over there cost today if they were like close to this price back like, I don't know, what, 12 years ago. Anyway, so at least back in 2010, this is all true, what I just said. So considering that this case happened in 2011, that gives you an idea as to why I mentioned that Bethesda was actually a pretty well-off town. And what I'm about to describe rarely ever happened in that town, if ever. Okay, so a woman on the 911 call, which I had described before I went into this random rant, says that there are two people in the back of a store that she works at. One seemed dead and the other was tied up and that she needed an ambulance right away. I'm sure when the dispatcher finally got into details, the 911 caller revealed that she actually worked at a Lululemon store.
Oh, I know this one.
Side note. Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Dang it. Every single time I tell Haley which case I'm doing, she goes, oh, never heard of that one. And then I start going into detail and she's like, oh, I've heard of it.
Once you started with the 911 call and the tied up in the back of the store, I was like, oh, that sounds familiar. Then you said Lululemon. I was like, oh, okay, yep. It's a good one,
though. I got to be honest. I did not know or hear about this case ever before I looked it up. This is actually the case I was going to do before I decided on the Turpin Kids. Mm-hmm. I was researching this case already, and then I went into my rabbit hole, and then I went into the Turpin 13. So I'd had this case written for a while, but I just completely pivoted.
This is a good one for sure, though.
So the dispatcher finally learns that the 911 caller works at a Lululemon store. She's actually an employee. Side note, most of the sources I also read or watched, because I watched some like YouTube channels about this case, they all said that they had never heard of Lululemon before. And I was shocked. I mean, this might sound privileged, but I'm from Southern California. I live in Southern California. I don't think I could exist without knowing about Lululemon. Like, it literally surrounds me in my everyday life. So for those of you who don't know, Lululemon store is this yoga brand that sells very expensive athleisure. I mean, leggings are on average $100 a pair, and that's on the lower end.
I had the most flimsy yoga mat from Lululemon. Because my dad sent me a Lululemon gift card, and I was like, I don't know what to buy from Lululemon. It was like a $250 gift card. And so I got like one pair of leggings and a yoga mat. And it's like, I hate it. It's a thin yoga mat, and it's like $150. And it's just, yeah, it feels like
insane.
Laying on the ground.
It's insane. So I got to admit, like, I was one of those, you know, 20-something-year-olds that when I got my first job, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to get Lululemon stuff. And I remember like saving up to like buy certain things from there. And since then, 12 years later, my priorities have changed. Cheaper, better quality brands have come about. I know Lululemon, as I was researching this case, because I was thinking about like, how do I describe Lululemon? I was actually looking into like all the stuff that's recently been in the PR, in PR about them, like, or press about them, where they're very skinny. And I do remember going, and I do remember like shopping at the store and thinking, I'm not a very like heavy person, mm-hmm. but I didn't fit in their stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it was insane. I remember going there and I was like, I don't understand how I can't fit into these things. Like, it made me feel a certain way about my body. So I just stopped shopping there after a certain time because I realized it wasn't like good for my mental health.
Right. There is cool things about Lululemon. Like, I know a few people who work for Lululemon and they get like 50% off and they get gym memberships. So they get a certain amount of money to, like, a month, which I want to say it's like $500 a month that they can use towards gym membership, workout classes, spin, whatever they want, as far as exercising goes, which is really, I think, cool. I wish more companies would do things like that.
It's cool, but on the other side, this is kind of going into a tangent, but I figured we would do that with this case because there's so much newer references in here. But as I was reading about this case, a lot of stuff about Lululemon came up. And one of the things that they were under fire about was the work culture that they create. Mm. They created this work culture of, you know, everyone wanting to work out on their lunch break. So people didn't take lunch breaks. They just like went and worked out. And they had this like very, all the people who worked there, first of all, were called educators. They weren't called employees because they were educating people or potential customers on this lifestyle. And they all had like a vision of the perfect Lululemon customer. And they aspired to be that ideal Lululemon customer. In some ways, it's really great that a company invests in someone's health and like health choices, but I think there was some sort of a pressure on everyone to look a certain way, be a certain way, be fit, or like have some sort of, you know, yoga novice about them. I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, so for those of you who don't know, Lululemon is just a really expensive yoga store. I was obsessed with them for a while. I am not anymore, although every now and then I do go check them out. And I still do like some of their stuff. But yeah, so this 911 caller is an employee of the Lululemon store in Bethesda, Maryland. She makes the call that she needs an ambulance right away because there is an unconscious person and then there's a person in the bathroom that may or may not be hurt. So long story short, yeah, probably would still love Lululemon if I could afford it or fit into it. And we're back to our story. when the employee who called 911 entered the store, now I'm going back in the story to describe what the employee saw when she entered. So this was in the morning, 9:30 a.m. on March 12, 2011. When she entered, she saw the entire store was in disarray and she immediately noticed blood towards the back of the store. I mean, there was blood kind of everywhere, but it was more focused on the back of the store. And this is where the dressing rooms were and their stock room was. So for the first time, instead of going into the store, this employee did what I have been telling Haley I would do every single time I was faced with this situation, is she ran the fuck out. She did not go and inspect further. She was like, this looks odd. Something's weird. The door was open. The door should not have been open. There's blood in the room. I'm going to run out and call 911 immediately. So that is what she did, which is exactly what I would have done. So whoever this person is, I'm very proud of them. while the 911 call was being made, there is a neighboring Apple store to this Lululemon store. And one of the employees came out and saw this frazzled, probably employee, and actually was brave enough to go in there with her to see what was happening. And when they finally make it to the inside of the store, they find a female employee who turns out to be Jaina Murray, who was also the manager on at the store. She was laying unconscious in a pool of blood in one of the dressing rooms. She was also later pronounced dead. And in the bathroom, there was another Lululemon employee, Brittany Norwood, who was tied up with her eyes closed, but it seemed like she was still alive and breathing. When the investigators finally arrived on the scene, they examined the scene thoroughly and found that the back store room was not in a great condition. Things were out of order. Like I said, everything was generally in massive chaos. There was blood everywhere, and there were bloody footprints from a size 14 male shoe in the store. Not only did they find the footprints coming in and going out of the store from the back storeroom, they also found bloody fingerprints on the back door, like the entry from the storeroom. Like, you know how stores always have this back entry that you push into? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm describing.
And I'm like, how do I talk about the story without spoiling it for anybody?
You can spoil it. I've had it happen a few times where you've been telling a story and I'm like, I know what this is.
Yeah, I know. This one's too good. You have to tell it.
It seems that one of the girls, so from the bloody foot fingerprints on the door, it seems that one of the girls had actually tried to escape but had been pulled back into the store. Money from the register was missing, and obviously all of this that I'm describing is pointing to a robbery that went terribly, terribly wrong. When Brittany Norwood finally...
Yeah, let's rob Lululemon. We could rob Apple next door. Makes sense.
Yeah, it is weird. There's going to be a lot of weird stuff with this case that's going to come. Clearly, Haley knows about some of it. But, you know, I just thought it was really bizarre. I won't spoil it. I'll just keep telling you.
Yeah.
So when Brittany Norwood... you know, woke up from her unconscious state, she provided the investigators with a statement, and it very much matched the conclusions that they'd already derived from kind of peripherally looking at the crime scene, which was, you know, it's probably a robbery that went wrong, money was missing, and clearly there was a struggle. So Brittany's statement said that around 9 p.m. on March 11th, 2011, this is the day before, night before, that they were found, they were closing up the store and heading home for the day. However, once Brittany left, she realized that she had actually left her wallet at the store, which had her Metro card in it. So she then called Jaina to come back. Jaina Murray was the victim in this case, and she was also the manager of the Lululemon store, who was responsible for opening and closing the store for that night shift. So Jaina, Brittany calls Jaina back. Jaina comes back and reopens the store for her so she could get her wallet. According to Brittany, they both re-entered the store just after 10 p.m., looked for Brittany's wallet but could not find it. So Jaina offered to give Brittany her Metro card since Jaina had actually driven that night. As they were about to leave, two men wearing ski masks entered the store. Jaina was stripped by one of the men and dragged by her hair to the back of the store, where the man then proceeded to brutally beat her and sexually assault her. Investigators had indeed actually found big bunches of Jaina's hair all around the store, which sort of corroborated parts of the story, like someone had clearly like pulled her hair out and blah, blah, blah. Haley's looking at me like, I know so much about this case and I don't want to talk about it. Brittany was then taken to the bathroom by the other man, who was zip tied by her wrists and ankles, and then he cut a hole in her trousers. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't just pull it off. Like, why do you care to cut holes? Weird. Anyways,
so she was sexually assaulted too.
Yeah, she's saying she was sexually assaulted too, but instead of like pulling her trousers down, they cut holes in them, which is like weird to me. If someone's in that much of a rush and that violent, like why would you take the time to cut a hole? Why wouldn't you just like rip them apart? I don't know. I'm not criticizing the statement of a victim. I'm just saying that's like an odd detail to put in there. So they cut a hole in her trousers and then they sexually assaulted Brittany too. The two men then took the money from the registers and fled the crime scene. The women were left beaten and bleeding, and Jaina passed away because of the nature of injuries was too severe. Brittany, however, survived. Jaina had been... Okay, this is where I'm going to give a trigger warning for people who, you know, are easily triggered by blood or graphic images. You know, fast forward a couple times, although there are important details in here that are worth listening to, but it's a trigger warning nonetheless. So Jaina had been murdered, and she suffered 313 different wounds to her body.
That's so many.
Now, yeah, I want to take a moment and imagine that you are the, like, by some miracle, like, you are the person hitting someone, anyone, you know, your hands or weapon, whatever it is that you're hitting them with. Anything at all, but do it 313 times. Like, I actually tried to imagine this, how much strength and stamina it would take to beat someone that many times.
I mean, just to hit the, like, if you were just going to take a bat and hit anything, like hit the wall or hit a TV 300 and something times.
I mean,
that's just so much. Like, you'd be so tired. It's like,
I would be tired. I would be out of breath. I would want to give up. Not to mention, it's like overkill. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just screams that someone was so insanely angry to do this to someone. And so, exactly. Killing. And so that's the first part where I was like, this seems weird.
Like, why would a robbery?
This can't be a stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why would it be a stranger who is doing this? Like, this has to be a, for us true crime, you know, junkies, is that a word that I could use? Probably not, because that's patented. But for us true crime lovers, when you read this or you listen to this, you immediately think what I thought, which was this was a crime of passion. So the stranger robbery theory already had its first hole in it for me. But, you know, maybe it was a person who knew Jaina and Brittany and was, like, disguising themselves as a stranger, which is why they wore a mask. You know, who knows?
Right.
There was also a toolbox besides Jaina.
Are there cameras?
From inside the store? No. But there is going to be CCTV footage that they're later going to pull from the Apple store, like, inside the Apple store and outside the Apple store. So I'll go into that in a little bit. So yeah, there was a toolbox found besides Jaina from which multiple tools had been used to beat her. This absolutely broke my heart as well. The tools used to beat her were a hammer, a knife, a wrench, and a very heavy iron bar. 107 of the wounds on Jaina were defensive, which, you know, I never actually took a minute to think about it, what defensive wounds versus like post-mortem wounds meant. Yeah,
but I mean, she was at honestly, least alive, like, for 107 times.
Yes, yeah. Which means she fought hard for her life. But not only that, if it could be any worse, it indicated that she was actually alive for most of her attack, assault yeah. and her attack. Yeah. I mean, the amount of pain that someone's enduring to, like, literally try and defend yourself 107 times, and then someone proceeded to then, like, hit her more beyond that. It's just, wow. So anyway, someone continued to beat her that badly while she was alive and kicking. There were 25 serious injuries to her face. That seems gory as well. I mean, this attack was absolutely awful. The fatal injury to Jaina was a stab wound to the back of her head. Like, that just, like, is so gross. Like, someone literally, like, In contrast to all of this, Brittany Aldo had fortunately lived through... Brittany Aldo had lived through a traumatic experience, fortunately only had sustained superficial injuries and actually was alive, which is great, you know?
Right. Why would someone go 300 and something times for one person and leave somebody alive?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, when I was reading the story, I'm like, wow, how lucky, you know? And I think in one of the sources I read, she probably, I think Brittany at some point mentioned that after she saw what happened to Jaina when she was fighting for her life, she kind of stopped fighting and resisting, and she sort of just laid there so the attackers wouldn't hurt her as bad, was her one of her explanations. Either way, the police started to look for the culprits right away by looking into clues from Brittany's account of the incident. A reward of $150,000 was put up for any information regarding the incident that led to an arrest.
Right, because CCTV... these guys are dangerous. If they're out there and yeah. out there, they are going to rob again and they're going to murder again.
Yeah, I mean, this is like psychotic killer status.
Right.
Especially this was a stranger. CCTV footage would later show that the neighboring Apple Store employee, so this is footage from inside the Apple Store, that there were two employees inside the store also, who could hear someone dying that night.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the crazy part to me. It's like, so you, there's a lot of commotion going on. The Apple Store is like,
yeah,
still open at that time of night or like getting ready to close. Yeah, it's like
10 p.m.?
Yeah, they're like probably just closing at that point in time. And you don't think to call 911 when you hear moaning and groaning? Like, what?
I definitely have thoughts about this. I'm going to go into detail about exactly what they heard because there is ear witness testimony of what he or she heard. But, you know, like to describe the scene to you guys a little bit more, this is sort of like a busy street. Like, you know, obviously I don't know where each of our listeners stay, but, you know, in at least in California, and I know in Hawaii, they have these like open shopping places, right? Like it's just a road of just shops, and that's kind of what this was. It was just like a street of very affluent like stores, like Lululemon, Apple, and whatever else that you can think of. And they were very close to each other. Yeah, and they were very close to each other. Like when I'm saying they're close to each other, they're literally like sharing walls with each other. You know what I mean? That's how close this Apple Store was. So this Apple Store employee says that they could actually hear noises that night of someone dying through the wall. And based on one of those Apple Store employees' accounts, the employee said, I quote, "I heard noises coming from the right side of the store, Apple Store, something heavy sounding like it was being hit or dragging, some grunting and some thudding. We approached the area of the store where the sound was the loudest, at which point we heard screaming. It sounded hysterical." End quote. The Apple employee said she heard only two female voices, one hysterically saying, I quote, "God help me, please help me," end quote. So, and you still, I mean,
and you don't call. I don't know.
This is bizarre. I mean, I honestly, like, as much as I am like the person who would walk into a room with blood and all of that shit and run away, if I am like not in the room and I can hear someone in trouble, I would at least make the call, you know?
Right.
And even if it is like, you know, a misunderstanding or whatever, the worst that will happen is that you'll be embarrassed. You know what I mean?
Like, and I think that's why a lot of people come in. They're like, they don't want to get involved and they talk themselves out of thinking that the worst is happening. And I think that is kind of what happened here in some way. But I mean, you're literally hearing dragging and thudding and someone saying, please help.
God help me.
God help me, please. Yeah. So that's just a little bizarre to me. Because, like, you know, like, I live in kind of a ratchet neighborhood a little bit where, like, there has been, like, people stabbed up by the park by my house and stuff. But, like, you hear the neighbors fighting with each other. You hear marital issues. But never have I ever heard, God help me, please help me, fucking
thudding. Like someone physically being beat.
Exactly. And I think I'd call 911. I mean, I'd hope I would call 911. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think I'm on the other end of the spectrum where I'm, like, hyper aware of everything. Like, I go from a 0 to 100, like, in, I don't know if Haley, you remember the story of my cousin, like, not responding to me the day she was supposed to come meet me. She was, like, MIA for 8 hours, and I, like, was telling Drew, like, I need to go file a missing person report.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I am definitely that person who would have called. I'm not saying, like, everyone reacts the same way, but to me, it just feels like there was
This isn't a ratchet neighborhood. This is freaking Apple and Lululemon. That Lululemon should even be open at that time. Then they know that every single day. You know what I mean? Up there.
I don't know what
was going through their mind.
I don't
mind.
Know what they thought.
I don't know either.
Anyways. It is weird. I can't really justify what they were thinking for sure. Like, I was at a loss. Anyways, the Apple employees were later under fire for not calling the police that night. But that's a different conversation. I'm not entirely sure what came out of that. Like, was there an investigation? Like, did they update their, like, employee handbook and, like, say if this happens then do this, blah blah blah. I'm not sure. But another CCTV footage outside of that same Apple store revealed two men in masks walking away from the Lululemon store. The police actually tracked down these men and found out that it was just two busboys that were leaving their night shift and ruled them out as suspects. Now before everyone asked me what did they do to rule, they were, yeah, but it was cold. Like, this is, you know, March. This is still, like, winter time.
Like, wearing, like, about to be, like, spring. COVID masks? Or, like...
No, they were just, like, wearing...
scarves.
Like, you know, when it's, like, chilly out. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
It was, like, very grainy CCTV footage, but all I could tell was that they were in all black gear and they were wearing some sort of mask. Like, you know.
Crazy.
So they... But the police did check them out and they ruled them out. I don't know what they did to rule them out. Maybe they had alibis, but they ruled them out. So they also looked into a homeless guy who lived in the area who actually did have violent tendencies and history of violence on his record. He actually was a regular at a local bar in the area. He was tracked down to a hospital with blood on him. It seems that he had gotten into a fight that night with someone. So the blood on him was neither Jaina's nor Brittany's. It was actually the guy he got into a fight with.
Did they do rape kit on Brittany?
Yes.
And they did they check?
I'm going to go into that.
Check Jaina too.
And they checked Jaina as well. Okay. Yeah. Yep. So days passed with no further leads, but Jaina's car was eventually found 3 blocks away from the store. This car, when examined, they found Jaina and Brittany's blood in it. Now, that is weird. Why would they both, in the middle of an attack, have left the store? Like, what I'm saying is, the fact that Jaina and Brittany's blood was in the car only means two things. That either Jaina and Brittany both at some point after that attack went into the car and moved the car, which would be odd since Jaina died of, like, a lot of injuries. Or it would mean that the two perpetrators, after doing all of this, went and got into Jaina's car. But instead of escaping in it, they just went and parked it 3 blocks away and then walked or took the metro from there. Like, it, I don't know. It's just a weird, weird part. Another weird part of this case. So the cops also found this odd as well. And since Brittany, especially since Brittany had mentioned nothing about the men escaping in Jaina's car, right? Like, it's weird that Jaina's car was moved. Brittany was clearly conscious. Like, why didn't she mention it? So when questioned again, she told the cops that due to the trauma that she had suffered that night, her memory was, like, really foggy on the details. But now that they were asking her about why they had recovered Brittany's blood in Jaina's car, she remembered that when they actually came into the store to look for Brittany's wallet, Jaina had parked her car right outside the Lululemon store. She wasn't supposed to have been parked there, but she had parked there because she thought it was going to be a quick, like, in and out. Yeah. I'm going to go in, let Brittany in. She's going to grab her wallet, and then we're going to leave. So when the men entered the store, the fact that Jaina's car was right outside and that it... So this is what Brittany is telling the cops. She said that once the men entered the car and they realized Jaina's car was outside the store and it could be towed, for some reason, that scared the shit out of them. And so, get this. They asked Brittany, after attacking Brittany and Jaina, to go get Jaina's keys and move her car for them a few blocks away.
Right. So and she's saying, after, originally she kind of played dead and now... they asked her to move the car and come back.
So she didn't even play dead. I think what she's saying is, I just stopped fighting them so they would spare my life. But then after they brutally sexually assault her, zip tie her, they untie her and tell her, go and move Jaina's car and then come back.
Yeah, so I can tie you back up.
And if you don't come back, then I will... I don't know, do what to you. I'm not sure. But anyway, so she goes, she moves the car, and she does come back.
I know, bizarre.
That's the most insane part. Like, why in the world would she not have just escaped and gotten help? Like, this is where the big story begins to get real, real sketch for me. Like, she claimed that she came back because they threatened to kill her if she did not
why
return.
Why
did
she even tell the cops that she moved the car?
What did she think they were going to do to her if she actually returned? Like, there was a better chance of her surviving by escaping in that car and getting help versus her moving the car and then coming back. Okay, but it gets worse, though.
Yeah, so, trauma, man. Does crazy things to your brain.
Yeah. Okay. And why... So, A, why did she come back? Two, why didn't she just go and get help when she had the opportunity to? But then... this gets worse. She also said that one of the guys claimed that he would be watching her the entire time, but like, how? Anyways, so in her interview to the police, and this is a crazy case because you can watch the entire interrogation with Brittany like on YouTube videos, so I highly urge you to go do that. In her interview, she says as she was moving Jaina's car, she actually passed by a cop car but did not stop him and get help because she was too scared to do anything to anger the masked men. Blown. Mind blown. Like, she passed a fucking cop car and then chose to not get help. Instead, she just went, after being sexually assaulted and beaten by these men, went and moved their escape vehicle for them somewhere away from them where they didn't even know where it was, and then went back. Guys, I don't even know what to say. The fact that she said this in an interrogation to the police, I was...
It's just going to be the question that we always ask.
Yeah. Which would be a spoiler, so, you know, I'll just give Haley relief in this case. Like, if you guys haven't figured this shit out... spoiler alert, Brittany did it, you know, and it just gets dumber and dumber and dumber from here. Like, she just digs herself a hole that's deeper and deeper.
Yeah, there's
no
masked men.
Yeah. When asked how Jaina's blood had gotten on Brittany, because they actually had found Jaina's blood on Brittany, she said that when she came back after dropping off this car for them, she had actually fallen knees first onto Jaina. Well, actually, no. She said they pushed her onto Jaina's body. And she had actually touched Jaina's head in the process as she was,
like, trying to get
herself up.
So the cops know at this point, too. They're just, like, trying to figure it out.
Yeah, they're probably just pushing her.
Trying to find the motive.
So if it wasn't... yeah, they're just trying to get her to answer questions.
But also, okay, to be fair, though, if you were attacked right next to somebody who was literally beaten 300 and something times... the likelihood of their blood being on you is probably really high. So that's why I think the cops already know it's
okay,
her.
Okay, but come up with a better answer, Brittany.
Well, that's why I think the cops already know. They're just trying to get her to say stupid shit now at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think they're just trying to catch her in a bunch of her lies. So she said that, you know, the perpetrators pushed her on Jaina's body. And if it wasn't clear already, Brittany's story continues to not line up. To mention Haley bringing up the rape kits performed on both Jaina and Brittany from the morning they were found both came back negative for sexual assault, which poked further holes into Brittany's story. Now, remember the size 14 shoe footprints that I mentioned, like that were found on the scene? They could have been the attackers. You know, it corroborated some of Brittany's story, or at least one of them. Nope. So they were actually, the footprints were made with one of the display size 14 shoes that were in the fucking store. So Lululemon actually doesn't sell shoes, and I knew that. So when I was reading the story, I was like, what? Lululemon sells shoes? And then I wanted to Google what their shoes look like. And then I read further into the story, and it said, no, the Lululemon store just kept shoes for their customers to try. Yeah, for their customers to actually try on, like when they were trying on athletic wear. Like, it was a weird thing that was put in there, but maybe it was for the mannequins. I'm not sure. But for some reason, they had those shoes, like certain size shoes, like in their stock room, in their storeroom.
Also, I feel like Lululemon isn't really got like a size 14 for men.
Yeah, that's a very large
size. If you're going to let your customers try it on, like your stuff is designed for small women.
Yeah. Well, they do have men's stuff there, too. But okay. I'm not sure which size 14 man is going and shopping at Lululemon. If one of you is a size 14 man who loves Lululemon, I sincerely and genuinely apologize. But I just honestly can't picture you. So
I know.
Find us a picture. So now, when the crime scene was examined even more in detail, in technically only two sets of footprints were found. Apparently, the size 14s, which we now know were from a stock shoe in the storeroom, and Brittany's. And get this, there was blood found inside both the men's size 14 shoe and Brittany's shoes that matched, like, the person who had worn both shoes had the same bloody sock. Like, the imprints inside each shoe, like, it's almost like someone wore a bloody sock, then took off one shoe and then wore Brittany's shoe, or Brittany wore both shoes. Like, it's just, why are people so dumb? I don't understand. Like fucking throw the shoe away. Why would you leave it then and on the store? Like, if you're gonna go take the effort to make fake footprints, go discard the fucking shoe. It's not like she didn't have time. I wish
this was the craziest part of this case, but the motive is crazy too.
No, it gets worse, guys. So I'm gonna repeat this if someone hasn't understood it. The person wearing both shoes was wearing the same bloody sock. So this is even weirder, because that would mean the killer took off his shoe and then took the shoes in the store, put them on, and then at some point before or after also tried on Brittany's shoe. Like, this really makes no sense whatsoever, to the point where I'm like laughing, because this is so dumb. Now, going back to the zip ties on Brittany. The zip ties on Brittany actually had teeth marks on them that showed that Brittany had actually tightened those zip ties onto herself. In fact, the more they examined the crime scene, it looked like the robbers didn't actually bring anything to this robbery. Everything used in the attack was from the store itself. It was almost like two people entered the store with just masks and then were like, oh, we didn't bring anything, so we'll just use everything from the store. And luckily, the store had everything that they needed to make this happen.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
The police finally confronted Brittany, like Haley was saying, to tell them the truth. Basically, they were like, you know, and you guys can watch this interrogation, like I said, online. They're basically like, look, no one's going to believe your bullshit story. You know, it's a made up story. So you really owe it to Jaina's family and your family, like, to tell us, like, what really happened. And she denies it. She says that, you know, she really is telling the truth and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then to go into it further, the injuries on Brittany, the cops go further in and push her more and say, look, the injuries on you were actually self-inflicted, and we can prove it. They were like superficial scratches. Even the hole in your trousers was staged, because clearly the rape kits came back negative. And they continue to push her for truth and anything other than this absolutely bullshit story that she had made up. And she refuses. So they eventually bring her brother in to see if her brother can get her to confess. This brother, also an idiot. I'm sorry if you were her brother, but you are, because whether you knew it or not, the camera was on. And so the brother urged her to tell him if Brittany had done it. And if she had, then he needed to go and get her a lawyer. Brittany then refuses and just says, you know, I just don't really want to talk about it here, which in itself is admission of guilt. And I don't know. It's just weird. So she was, you know, soon after that arrested and charged with first degree murder of Jaina Marie. Now, it's clear that Brittany is lying. But I mean, the one major thing missing here is motive. And this is what Haley was talking about. Like, why did Brittany kill Jaina? Like, what was the incentive that she have to do this? Well, it turns out that the management of the store a few days before the murder had called a meeting. And they had called a meeting because they had suspected that someone was stealing inventory, because things in their general ledger and accounting were probably not matching up. So as per standard protocol, Jaina, while closing up the store with Brittany on March 11th, did a bag check on Brittany. You know, and this is a usual, like, hey, you're leaving the store, I'm closing up the store, I need to check your bag to make sure you didn't take anything. It's supposed to be a very routine check. Well, Jaina found a brand new pair of Lululemon yoga pants in Brittany's bags, tags and all. When Jaina questioned Brittany, Brittany said that she had actually bought them off from another worker and that the other worker was new and had just forgotten to take the tags off. Brittany even told Jaina to call this employee if she didn't believe her. I'm assuming she did that because she didn't think Jaina would call her bluff, where Jaina fucking did. She called her bluff and she called the employee. I'm sure the employee told Jaina that the story was not true. They then left for the night, which is when Brittany concocted the story of the forgotten wallet to get Jaina back in the store. This right here is the crux of the entire case because it shows premeditation. Like, she left, she came back with a plan. And I think this is what got her in trouble.
Right.
Along with all the other stupid bullshit, like, you know, making footprints with size 14 shoe.
But this is what makes you a first degree
killer. This is the difference between like first degree and second degree. Yep. So once Jaina was in the store, Brittany attacked Jaina with multiple tools. The attack took a total of 10 to 20 minutes, and Jaina was alive almost the entire time, right up until Brittany severed her spinal cord with a knife to the back of her head. Ugh. After Jaina died, instead of leaving, she made the gruesome decision to stage the crime scene to look like a robbery. So guys, after she's beat this girl up, stabbed her, hit her 313 times, like she's laying in a pool of her blood, Brittany decides that I'm going to make this look like a robbery. So she takes the size 14 shoe, she wears it, then she stomps in Jaina's blood. Then she stomps around the store to make those footprints, discards the shoe somewhere, then superficially scratches herself, makes a hole in her pants, zip ties herself, and instead of leaving, decides to lay there the entire night pretending to be a victim of this made-up sexual assault next to a person she killed.
I know, it's crazy.
For almost 10 hours. I mean, this person is insane. Insane. Like, this person is psychotic. Brittany Norwood is psychotic. I don't even know how to describe what that is. Like, I have never even heard of a serial killer doing that. Usually, like, serial killers go and discard bodies and revisit crime scenes. They don't, like, lay with them for 10 hours.
Right.
It's insanity. Again, so why would Brittany do all this? Just to cover up stealing a pair of yoga pants? It turns out that actually Brittany was a star soccer player with no criminal background, unfortunately, until her time in college.
Kleptomania.
Yeah, this wasn't the first time she was actually caught stealing. She had been expelled from school for stealing and had ended up taking up the job at Lululemon as a way to rebuild her life. It's said that she so desperately wanted to keep this job that the thought of being caught stealing again was so unbearable to her that she had initially tried to convince Jaina not to report her when she called her back. However, unfortunately for her, for Brittany and for Jaina, Jaina already had reported Brittany. So in that moment, instead of saying, fuck, I messed up, I have to face the music now, Jaina went into revenge mode. She's like, well, how do I get revenge on this person who's now going to ruin my life.
You stole something so minor that probably would have just lost your job versus now you're going to jail for first degree murder forever.
This is why she's insane. She's psychotic. Like, just that was enough to set her off to beat someone 313 times. Anyways, so she obviously wanted to keep this job so desperately that she flipped. And instead of trying to convince Jaina to not report her, she planned revenge and then immediately murdered her. So Brittany's defense was not that she wasn't guilty. It was that it was second degree murder, that it wasn't, you know, it was an in the moment impulsive kind of a decision to murder her. And this is where I mentioned the fact that they left the store and Brittany called Jaina back to the store with the intent of doing something, proved that it was premeditated. And this was the
toolkit.
Yep. And staged the crime scene, chose to stay there for 10 hours past that. Like,
she might have gotten away with it if she left, man.
She's just fucking insane. Anyways, all of those bizarro things combined, there was no way she was getting out of this with second degree murder. In a climax to the sensational murder case that basically rocked this affluent little well-kept bubbled town, the circuit court judge Robert Greenberg basically gave Brittany Norwood life in prison without the possibility of parole. And I quote, at some point even said, "I have no doubt, Miss Norwood, that you are a deeply troubled woman. My sympathy for your plight, ma'am, does not begin to approach what I feel for the Murray family. You will live. You will see another sunrise, another sunset. It may be through a prison window, but there will be Christmases. There will be telephone calls. There will be visits. The only visit Jaina Murray will have are those to her grave." And that's how he ended that courtroom trial. It's really sad. Jaina was only 30 years old when she passed. She was full of life, you know, just like everyone always says. And I'm sure it's true in this case. But, you know, no one deserves to die that way. Like, I cannot imagine what that woman was thinking when this person, who was her co-worker, was brutally beating the fuck out of her.
Yeah. I don't wish that death on anyone. Maybe some pedophiles, but that's about it.
I mean, that is rough. Anyway, so this case absolutely blew my mind. I actually had not heard of it. How did you hear of it?
So I think, well, I always put notes in my things, like, of cases. So I think I first saw it on TikTok and then on a podcast. I think Murder with My Husband did an episode on it.
Oh.
And it wasn't my first time hearing it, but they definitely covered it at some point.
Oh, wow. But okay, I'm going to have to go.
I think it's the first time I heard the whole story was through that. But it's always interesting to hear it from one podcast to the other and you covering it, because there's always details that you aren't covered. You know, people leave out, or they don't find it as important as somebody else, or they tell the story a little bit differently.
Yeah, I try not to do other podcasts and my sources, because it kind of like frames how I'm going to tell the story in someone else's way. So I just try to form the story in my own head. But now I'm curious, and so I'm gonna have to go and listen to the Murder with My Husband one. But anyways, that was the story, guys. So we will see you 2 weeks from now with a drink in hand. Don't let the murder thoughts bite.